recognizing the unsung heroes of sports media.
I'm stuck in this pit, working for less than slave wages, working on my day off.
This is the Producers Podcast.
I'm a producer.
Oh, you're the executive producer.
With your host, Dimitri Ravenos. And it starts now.
Today's episode with Tyrone Johnson from 97.5 The Fanatic slated for a little bit later in the run, but over the course of the last week, I was down in Alabama. I had gone down to visit my old college roommate. We were going to the Tennessee game, but I had left kind of early in the week to make time to visit some friends that are in sports radio around the state. And I believe this was Thursday night. I was up in Huntsville, and I'd gone to dinner with my friend Arky Shea, who's the program director and afternoon host on 7:30 The Ump. And we were talking about some of the things that I had learned from doing this podcast. And Arky said, being in a smaller market, for the most part, his vision of a producer was just to push the buttons and execute what it is the host had in mind. And I said, you know, as I've been doing this show, certainly I have come across guys like that, but then you come across someone, and I name drop Tyrone, like Tyrone Johnson, that clearly Mike Missinelli listens to. Clearly Mike is looking to Tyrone to guide what should be coming next, where he should be moving, what topics are tired, what topics need to be hit on, what angle is going to draw the most reaction. You find guys like Tyrone that are very much the captain of the ship, even if the ship doesn't have their name on the side. And that's taking away nothing from Mike or any host that works with a strong, talented vocal producer. Obviously, the host is the one that is both the face and the voice of the show. But I wanted to put the spotlight on Tyrone today for a couple of reasons. Number one, his career has taken a very interesting path. There is a little bit of hard news in the background. There's NPR in the background, which you don't come across a lot in commercial radio overall, let alone sports. And now he's into television as well on NBC Sports Philadelphia. So I thought it'd be a lot of fun to hear Tyrone's story and also to give you an idea of just how hectic, just how busy a guy has to have the kind of control of his show that Tyrone does on 97.5 in the afternoons up in Philadelphia. So last week, we did a little bit smaller, right? Raleigh's not a small market by any stretch of the imagination, but compared to where we had been before, we did take a little dip in market size last week when we visited with Alec Campbell. So let's get back into the top 10. Let's get back into the major markets. This is my chat with Tyrone Johnson from 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia. You have had an interesting career where you've done producing not only for sports talk, but news as well, and also public radio, right?
Yes, indeed. I've had a pretty diverse experience because the business has gotten tougher and tougher, and I'm a person who would like to stay in this business because I love it despite the fact that it's shrinking. So I found that by having the ability to switch to different facets of the business, it's a good way to stay in the business. And it ended up making me more well-rounded at each stop because you kind of take something from another place and you apply it to that new place. Because at the end of the day, the science of radio remains the same.
So that's kind of what I wanted to get at. So there are the science radio is a good way to put it. There are the basics that are going to be the same everywhere, but in terms of what your role actually entails, how does it differ between, let's start with just news and sports?
With news and sports, it stays pretty, if you're doing straight hard news, obviously then it's just the facts, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's commentating, with sports and commentating, it's exactly the same. What it comes down to is you have to give a strong opinion, and then you have to be able to back up that opinion with facts. And
right,
whether it's talking about, you know, Tom Brady or Donald Trump, that remains the same. So the fundamental is always having an opinion and then being able to support that opinion. That doesn't change. Where the public radio part comes in and the hard news is it helps you fortify those facts. If you need hard facts like you do in the news, it can help you amplify your opinion talk because you're able to present a stronger opinion because you're more fact-based. Many times with sports, we take these partial facts, and many times with opinion radio, you take a lot of partial facts.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have a hard news background, you're able to fortify a lot of those arguments that much better, and I think it pays off. So the hard news absolutely helps the opinion, probably more than the opinion helps the hard news part of radio.
Before you started doing hard news, a headline news sort of radio, did you learn in that job how to actually research what it is you're talking about and forming your opinion? Was that a skill you had before you were sort of thrown into that?
I was, because I was lucky enough to work with a lot of journalists
mm-hmm.
early in my sports radio career, because that's what I did first. And early on, because sports radio is a pretty new medium in the grand scheme of things. I mean, really, you talk about in the 80s, it didn't really exist.
Right.
And now we're only one generation later. Pretty much every single host at that time, at least in the city of Philadelphia where I reside, they were all former journalists. So everything, they were already double sourcing things and doing all of that for a talk because that was their background and that's all they knew how to do. Therefore, if you worked under them, you had to do that. That was just part of the deal.
Right.
Now, as time went on, you have guys who their background is radio. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. Their background is they were a super fan or they were introduced to this business in a different way. So their approach is different. But in the beginning, if you were in the business around the year 2000, you were surrounded by former journalists. Therefore, if you were going to present something to them when you produced the show, it had to have been researched. And a lot of this was pre-internet. So you were flipping through almanacs. You were just flipping through the almanacs and having to go through things like that. And that experience actually paid huge dividends because obviously you learn and you use that technology. But the basis, the framework was already there. So I was lucky to start when I did because I was surrounded by journalists.
So what about the other side of sports radio, which is, you know, if we're talking right now about information, which is entertainment. When you're working with guys that are coming from a journalism background, as their producer, what are you doing to sort of make them sound a little less dry, a little more animated? You know, this is such an intimate medium, or can be such an intimate medium, that being able to really get your hooks in the listener is really important.
It is. My key thing is add my own personality. And that I say that to any producer.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has something that they're good at. And the job every day is to get the most out of the host. Now, for certain hosts, that's my voice. I need to come on the air with the host and act like co-host during certain moments because I can add a perspective or I can try to lead that host to a place that I think will really hit with the audience.
Right.
Other times it might be research. It might be other things. The key thing is you have to know your host. And then remember that every segment, every hour, every show, the goal of the producer is to get the most out of the host
mm-hmm.
to make the show better. And as long as that's remembered, you don't really have a problem. So that's what I try to add. I try to add whatever the host needs that day. If the host has something really going entertaining, my job is to then sit back and see if I can provide any fact to him in his ear with a piece of paper, whatever it may be, to amplify this role that he's on. If it's not rolling along, then my job is then to be entertaining and use the facts that he provided and try to put some more color to it. So really, it always depends on what's presented to you. And the most important thing to me is just you pre-plan a show. Everyone pre-plans a show, but the people dictate what we talk about, just like the news cycle dictates a lot of things. And if we can't respond to the news cycle, we're in a lot of trouble.
Is everything okay behind you?
Yeah, I know it's just happening.
It's all right. I mean, it was just barely bleeding through. But it's as you are talking, it sounds like they are responding to some sort of emergency happening right over your shoulder.
It's not even. I don't even see them.
So let me ask you this, because you talking about having to know exactly what it is the host needs from you from day to day, it sounds like you and I are going to agree on something. Because I tell this to young guys all the time. I would much rather have a producer that is good at reading people and is creative. You can build a Rolodex You know, what you can't build is just that ability to read from moment to moment, host to host, what is going to make each segment better.
You're absolutely right about that. I completely agree with you. The creativity is far more important because, like you just said, Google works. It's so much easier to get phone numbers and get information now than it's in previous times. But the creativity, in some ways, is harder to find sometimes. So it's absolutely much more important to be creative, have ideas. Also, you have to recognize that not all your ideas are going to be great ideas and not all your ideas are going to be used, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Your job is to provide. It's almost like factory work. You're supposed to pump out a certain number of quality widgets every single day and have something. Because there'll be days where the host has something and they don't need you, and there's another day where the host will have absolutely nothing.
Right.
There's just human nature where nothing's really working. So having ideas is far more important than the Rolodex. Plus, some hosts require a lot of guests. All hosts require creativity.
Yep.
Some shows are much more, you know, caller-based or whatever. A lot of places have, where I work now, a lot of the guests are sort of week to week. You kind of know Mondays we have this person. You know, that kind of gets set up. Tuesdays we have this person. What changes is the news cycle and how we can react to it or how we can grab people. Or most importantly, what do we do when there's not a lot going on? Because we have to entertain people 24/7. They treat us like doctors. We don't get snow days. We don't get weather days.
Right.
We always have to produce. You know what I mean? We always have to produce. So we have to have something all the time, and that's more important than the Rolodex because, like you said, the host may have somebody. Another person in the building, the program director. There might be 1,000 people that have a phone number.
Yeah.
But your ideas are yours. And that's more important every time.
You know, it's interesting you brought up that callers can take things in a different direction. One thing we haven't really done much on this show is talk about the art or science, whichever you choose to call it, of call screening. Like, how important is that to every day when you and Mike are doing the show? How important is it that you are weeding out the callers that either are going to take things in a direction you don't want to go or just not take the conversation anywhere?
It's hugely important. And I actually have a screener that does, we actually have a screener, and then my job is to then go in and screen further. And I was always, but originally when I was a screener, I was always a tough screener because we want phone calls. We don't need phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Like the host is being paid to talk, and we want interaction. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that to be arrogant in any way or anything like that. We absolutely want interaction, but we want good interaction. And,
yeah.
We want good interaction, and we're also not in the business of trying to make somebody else famous for their little bits and their little jokes and everything like that. Like, we're trying to do a job here. So really, the key thing is I have a guy call up, and they'll say, hey, I want to talk about the Eagles. Okay.
Yeah.
What about them? Okay. Like, sometimes as simple as that. Many times at some stations, that's good enough to get on the air at some places.
Yeah.
Okay. What about them? And then they'll say, oh, this player. Well, the host is talking about this. Do you have anything related to that? Those little follow-ups usually trip up the people that are pranking.
Right. Right.
99 out of 100 times, because that little stuff. And like, you know, with a young kid, don't ask how old they are. You ask for their date of birth.
Mm.
And then you tell them, oh, you have to be 24 to be on. No, 25. You can throw them off with stuff like that,
right.
Little tricks like that. But that kind of stuff. So it's really, really important because we want callers, but we don't need them in the conventional way, meaning the show will still go on without them.
Now that every station has a text line, you're on Twitter, Mike's, I mean, every personality is on Twitter, how much of the listener interaction is you reading what they send in?
You have to use it.
You
absolutely have to use it. It's mandatory.
Is it a higher percentage, though, at this point than the callers?
We're traditional still, and we're still more caller-based because that's just the traditional way, and I have a host that's been doing this. I mean, he's a legend in the city. He's been doing it over 20 years. His format's worked. He's had great ratings. Other shows do much more. I do a television show in Philadelphia basically solely off of social media.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an important tool, but the callers still outweigh it now. But as time goes on, the social media gets more and more important, obviously.
So I do want to talk about your TV show here in a second, and I'm going to tie it into a question I use at the end of every interview. But let's talk about social media real quick. As you are getting interaction from social media, from texting, particularly because your show does still rely more on phone calls, what is the screening process like to decide, you know, what comments make it to Mike? What comments make it to air?
The number one thing for people, and you like, we know this about callers, people feel a lot more comfortable being profane
right.
on social media than they ever would. And a lot of times, if they're profane, it has to, for us to spend the time to edit someone else's words,
right?
It better be a pretty elite joke. Something, it has to really knock our socks off. So number one, we want people to be passionate, but if you want it to make the air, it has to be clean.
Yeah.
Because we don't necessarily have the time to be editing someone else's words on the fly in real time. So that's a big one. And the other part is to the point. The good thing about Twitter is it's short and sweet. But sometimes people want to do continuation tweets and things like that. That's not going to work. We're not going to read four tweets.
Yeah.
And we're just not going to do it and on subject. So that's the thing. And then it's a different day. Some days a funny joke will work. Some days we want information. Sometimes we want a quick opinion. Sometimes we're doing a poll. We do a poll every single day. We do a poll on Twitter every single day. And we get people's votes and things like that, and we want their replies to that. So really what it comes down to is keep it clean and have an opinion, without a strong opinion, without being profane. Please don't be profane, because you can't read it.
So I end the show, no matter who's on, with the same two questions. So you mentioned your TV show, Sixers Outsiders, which is on NBC Sports Philadelphia. It is very much a fan post-game show, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. After the post-game show, where the analysis comes from former players, et cetera, then we come on and we're basically just no agenda. We just react to what the people have said.
All right. So the first question I always ask people, and how I wanted to tie it to your show, was what do you want to do next? And for you, I would ask, do you see a future for yourself without radio?
That'd be tough. I hope not. I can tell you, I hope not. I love radio. I love it. It's the only thing that I really, really know how to do. TV, I'm figuring out on the fly.
Right.
I hope I do this until I'm not working anymore. I would like to one day be in a position where I didn't have to work.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the only job I ever want to have. So hopefully I will not have to be in that situation. Could I envision it possibly happening? Possibly. But hopefully not.
Yeah. And then the other question I always ask... No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, and the reason I say possibly is the industry's always changing.
Right.
I think what I do now works. There may come a time where the people don't want what I do. And if that ever comes, I think I'll be able to find work doing something else. But I hope not.
So the other question I always ask people at the end is, what do you wish either your program director or your host understood better about your role?
Huh. I wish that people understood, that they understood just how thoughtful I am about the things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because each day, when you work with somebody every single day, and you're talking to a person 4 hours a day, every single day, like, people don't talk to their spouses 4 hours a day every
right.
single day when it's, as far as straight speaking. You get to know them pretty well, and you get to notice their moods and things like that. So there's a time where I'm laying back. And I'm laying back because I think the host is in a bad mood, and I don't think today would be a good day to have an on-air fight, for
right.
example. That's not me not being engaged. That's me being engaged and just being smart about how I engage.
Right.
And I think that sometimes those kind of details don't get picked up by host or program directors, because a lot of times when people aren't in a great mood, they don't know they're not in a great mood.
Right. Yeah, that's very insightful.
They don't. It's not that they're, you know, that they're short that day. Well, if you're going to be short, should I come in with this contrary opinion?
Right.
And then you're short with me, which then will lead to being short with callers on a day where I think we need to have more wide-reaching conversation. So I pay attention to a lot of the human part of it outside of the mechanics, and I don't think – and I don't talk about that. That's just something you do.
Yeah.
So I think that's the main thing that that would be a main thing, that right there. I hope that makes sense.
I love the discussion of call screening and hearing what Tyrone's philosophy is on it, and that's sort of where we will wrap up today, because – when it comes to major market sports radio, particularly in the Northeast, so much of the format was built on the opinions of the callers, right? So much of the format was built on the guy sort of steering the conversation and then listening to what it was Joe Sixpack had to say about the Phillies pitching rotation or who the Jets should be starting at quarterback. Name whatever market relatable element you want to make it make sense for you. But in 2019, and this is something that Jason and I have talked about a lot on our calls. This is something we've talked about as we talk about client shows, as we talk about just various shows in general. With so many different ways to interact, how important is hearing a listener's voice on the air? I mean, I've written this line a lot, and I stand by it. If, you know, Toucher and Rich are doing a show up in Boston, the only guy that cares what Terry and Brighton has to say about what moves the Red Sox should make in the offseason is Terry and Brighton. When you are working on one of those shows where there are two, three, sometimes as many as four regular voices, I don't understand what adding callers to the mix adds, right? There's so many ways to interact. As I mentioned before, texts, tweets, you know, all kinds of different things that listeners can get their opinions in there, and hosts can be a little more diligent about what comment bounces them to the next thought, what comment or what tweet or text is going to get them further down the road they are either currently on or closer to the road they want to be on. I think that's important. And so where it comes in for producers is how you are hearing the show. Right? I can't tell you how many times I've done fill-in work and the producer will just leave people on hold without me saying, hey man, I'm not talking about this topic right now. Just let the guy go. Tell him to call back later if he wants to, but tell him that, you know, I do fill-in work in South Carolina all the time. Tell him that right now I don't particularly care what Dabo Swinney had to say after Clemson's big win last Saturday. We're in the middle of talking about the Carolina Panthers. I think there are a couple of things that I hope producers take away from listening to Tyrone talk about call screening. Number one, not every call needs to be on air. This is going to sound very harsh, but I mean it, and I think the format would do good to learn this lesson. Not everyone's opinion is valuable, right? The only opinion that is valuable is the one that works for your show. And I don't mean agrees with you. I mean the one that makes your show more entertaining. So be selective with who gets on air. And number two, don't be afraid to train your callers a little bit, right? Don't be afraid to be just a little bit gruff about, hey, look, we're not talking about that right now. If you want to weigh in on baseball while we're talking about the start of the NBA season, call back in another segment. Keep it short. Keep it moving. That is the whole, I think that if you boil it down to its very essence, that is a producer's job, right? Keep things moving. Keep things entertaining. You are working for the larger audience, not just the small percentage that wants to interact with the host. My name is Dimitri Ravanas. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. You can reach out to me on social media. The details are coming here in just a moment. Also, be cool to the people that are cool enough to be a part of this show. And if you liked what Tyrone had to say, if you hated what Tyrone had to say, if you just want to pick his brain a little bit, feel free to reach out to him as well. He is on Twitter at Ty Johnson News. We'll talk to you next week on another edition of the BSM Producers Podcast.
You don't want to believe it, but maybe the show is over.
Thank you for listening to the Producers Podcast. To connect with Dimitri, follow him on Twitter at Dimitri Ravanos. And for the latest sports media news, visit our website, VeritSportsMedia.com. We'll be right back.